You're listening to Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. A staircase along the coast of Malibu. Pacific waves crashing into different sized rocks. You hear it? This is your staircase, and it allows you access to this part of the beach. You have that access because of a voter-approved proposition that dates back to 1972. The initiative created the California Coastal Commission, and for the past 47 years, it's worked to regulate land use and to allow you to enjoy the more than 840 miles of California coast.
They have a lot of power, and by law, they are supposed to let the public access the beach, which most people know means keeping pathways open and keeping homeowners from kicking people off the beach. But there's also another provision almost no one knows about in the Coastal Act, and that's that the commission has to preserve affordable lodging along the coast.
That access, along with affordable lodging by the beach, is the subject of a new documentary that premieres tonight on KCET's SoCal Connected. It's called Access Denied, and producer Ben Bergman did a lot of reporting on it. So here's how coastal development is supposed to go. The developer appears before the Coastal Commission to get approval to build. The commission looks over that proposal. If a development blocks public access to the beach, they either nix the deal or they require the developer to build in access. Or, what happens a lot of times, is that developer will pay a mitigation fee. Well, a lot of times, none of those things happen at all, or that mitigation money just sits. Take, for example, this piece of land. Next to a park called Malibu Bluffs. It's right across from Pepperdine University. It's high above the Pacific, but was originally set to be used for the public to hang out and take in all this idyllic beauty. And the developer went before the Coastal Commission.
Well, the commission was very skeptical. They said, this is this beautiful park here. This should be something that's visitor serving, which doesn't necessarily mean another park. It could mean a hotel where people can at least come and stay rather than gated communities.
If we give up this bluff, if we give it up from the public's use, it's gone. It won't ever come back.
That's Commissioner Mary Schallenberger. Now, the developer of this piece of land is a company called Unvarnished, and it's headed up by a guy named Scott Gillen. He's a former filmmaker who's found another calling in designing and building homes. Very expensive homes, like $50 and $100 million homes. And that plot of land next to that park and behind that gate will have at least five of them.
But the commissioner said, wait a minute, if you build this mansion, at least give us $4 million to build a campground for foster kids up the road.
And where is that? Should we go there next?
Well, we can go there, but there's nothing to see there because it's just a patch of dirt and grass. There's no signs of the camp for kids being built.
Will it ever be built, do you think?
It doesn't look like it because the city of Malibu and Malibu residents have strongly opposed the project. They say it's because they're worried about fire danger. But a lot of people see that as kind of a fig leaf because Malibu, in general, never wants campgrounds. They don't want outsiders in their community.
It's too many people here already. I personally wouldn't like it because it would bring more people and more mess.
We want to keep Malibu, Malibu. Not turning into a tourist destination.
Those are two Malibu residents who were interviewed for SoCal Connected, Blue Blervark and Alan Sarlo. And the city of Malibu continues to hold up that foster kids campground, despite the $4 million in the Coastal Commission bank account.
And they do pay that money. It's not the developer's fault. But what happens then is the money sits there, and it's not used for anything.
So, we're talking about tens of millions of dollars, right?
Yeah, so this money is there, and, you know, it's supposed to go towards renovating cottages at Crystal Cove or to building another youth hostel in Santa Monica or maybe to renovating campgrounds. But the money is not being spent. So the money helps get these projects approved with the enticement of things like more campgrounds, but then the mansions get built, but the campgrounds never get built.
there was a particular example that's not necessarily something being built from scratch, but a remodel, a quote-unquote remodel. An old Malibu, what was it, the Casa Malibu Inn?
This was pretty much the only affordable place to stay in Malibu for many years.
You want to go take a look? Let's take a drive down PCH and check it out.
All right.
All right, here we go. This stretch of coastline between the two places, we see a lot of these little homes, right? And garages and people parking.
These little modest Malibu homes.
I mean, by Malibu standards, they're not particularly big. But boy, there are a lot of signs that say you can't park here.
Well, one of the things we looked at is that there can be a beach, but if there's nowhere to park, the beach might as well not be there, because how are you going to get to it? And homeowners know that. So a lot of homeowners will put up fake no parking signs.
There's one right there.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's not a real sign. But if you're just the average beachgoer, you're not going to say, well, maybe I'll chance it. And you're not going to park there. And so then the homeowner gets to
it looks official,
keep the
right?
beach for themselves. It looks official, but it almost always is
There's
not.
Another one. Yep.
And this is something that the Coastal Commission does. They go up and down and patrol this. But the problem is that there's only one officer for this entire stretch. And these signs, one will get put down, one will be taken away, and then it'll pop up again. So it's a game of whack-a-mole, and this happens all the time. And you know what the worst part is, Steve, is there have been cases where people have gotten real parking tickets from the fake no parking signs.
So parking citation person comes and gives tickets even though it's really not against the law to park there.
Yeah, because they either don't know or don't care. And then, you know, maybe if then the person who got the ticket researched this, but it's kind of hard to do that. But you can actually get a real ticket on a fake sign. It's been known to happen. And, it's why a lot of people just don't want to chance it.
They sure do look official, those signs. And they're signs, by the way, that you can buy at, any hardware store, drugstore.
I went to the
right?
hardware store in Malibu, and it's full of these fake no parking signs, and you can go and put it up and then, have the beach to yourself.
All right, let's take a look. All right, here we are down PCH, Ben Bergman, outside of Nobu. I'm craving a little sushi, actually.
That sounds great. We can expense that, right?
No.
Come on.
On our public radio salary. I'm not sure we can afford that. But anyway, so here we are in a place that used to be called the Casa Malibu Inn.
This was one of the few affordable places you could stay in Malibu for decades. But then the billionaire Larry Ellison came along and wanted to build what we see now, which is the Nobu Ryokan.
Now, this is a hotel and sushi.
Yes, there is a big restaurant, and then it's not a hotel, Steve, it's a Ryokan. But the rooms here are so expensive. That's a Japanese word. But they were written up in the New York Times as the anxiety of the $2,000 a night hotel room. Could you actually enjoy a hotel when you were spending $2,000?
Well, if you're a billionaire, what does it matter?
Pocket change.
Right. But the impetus of the California Coastal Commission is to make sure and to ensure that people have public access and affordable access to the beach.
And to protect affordable lodging. So if ever there was a case you think that they would want to look at, it would be this, because room rates literally went from about $200 a night to over $2,000 a night, yet the commission never heard the case.
Never heard the case because the city and the property deemed it as
a remodel. It was deemed a remodel, which didn't have to go before the Coastal Commission. If someone would have appealed that decision, if anyone, you or me, would have appealed, it probably would have. But there's so much development along the coast that no one really noticed. And they were allowed to build this Ryokan, this hotel, where room rates are more than $2,000 a night, which is the exact opposite of affordable lodging.
And as Ben and I roam Pacific Coast Highway, looking for spots to access the ocean, we come across that staircase I introduced to you at the outset.
It's a beautiful staircase, but it took 2 decades of legal wrangling before this staircase could open in 2016.
The staircase actually ends in rocks, and we're getting wet over here before the staircase even ends.
So
this isn't a beach. This is just rocks with water.
It is a stairway to nowhere, because It took two decades of legal wrangling before this staircase finally opened in 2016. But by the time it finally opened, the beach had almost washed away. So there's really no beach to access here.
If I were somebody who wanted access to this beach and I'm coming down these stairs, I mean, I can't put a beach towel anywhere. I guess I could sit on some of these rocks.
There's just not much beach left. And this is what's happening and what we found doing this investigation is that the Coastal Commission faces two threats. One is these very wealthy developers who want to block access. But the more formidable foe is actually nature, because the coastline is shrinking every year and there's less beach for the public to access.
Ben Bergman, producer reporter for KCET SoCal Connected. Always nice to be out with you, especially in an idyllic place like this.
It's been a pleasure, Steve. Thanks for coming to the beach.
Well, the documentary, Access Denied, airs tonight on KCET. One thing you will never be denied on this program is access. You will have access to information each and every day on Greater LA. And just ahead, the smoke in the air and the haze on the air. Fires emit bad stuff, yeah. And also confusing terms. You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Well, onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. A lot of folks are being affected by wildfires today. But even if you are not, you can still smell it. Do you smell that smoke? Do you see it in other parts of the area? That sort of air pollution isn't good for anyone. It's bad for the environment, obviously, and the state's overall climate goals. But it's also bad for your health. Breathing in wildfire smoke can cause a number of symptoms, including wheezing, coughing, chest pains. It can be especially harmful for pregnant women, children, the elderly. Dr. Zab Mozenifar is a lung specialist and the medical director of the Women's Guild Lung Institute. Dr. Mozenifar, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
I heard you got evacuated yesterday.
Well, we were part of the, did not completely get evacuated, but we started being prepared because we were right at the outskirts of that mandatory zone. I live in Castlemar.
When did you get the call to leave? Were you awakened by the emergency text?
No, I was a runner. I'm a runner, Steve. I went up running at about 4:45 in the morning, and I got up the trail from Los Leones Trail, and I saw this mass of fire, which I was frightened, and then I ran back, and then I saw a bunch of texts from a number of friends that we should be preparing to evacuate.
When we think about, you said you saw the fire, and the one thing that we can see flames, but you smell that smoke, and that smoke can linger for long periods of time. The air quality in, especially along the west side, just because of where the wind is pushing a lot of this smoke, is really bad. What does that do to people's lungs?
So just remember, Steve, there are these gases and particulate matters. The gases are carbon monoxide, aromatic hydrocarbons, ozone. And then particulate matters are two kinds, what's called PM10 and PM2.5. These are PM10s are 10 micron or 10 micrometer in diameter. And they go, you just inhale them and goes right into your lungs and airways. It becomes a major irritant. Now, PM2.5s, they go even deeper, and they are the ones that may create long-term impact, even in healthy people, much less vulnerable population, which I call patients with people with lung disease, heart disease, children, pregnant women, elderly, or anyone with immune deficiency. These particular matters are not very healthy and creates a cascade of events in the lungs, all sorts of inflammatory reactions. Then patients start having cough, irritation, wheeze, irregular heartbeat, phlegm, and these are not good.
So if you see the smoke, right, or you smell the smoke, are you inhaling those 2.5 or 10 micron particles?
Absolutely. When you smell, you are really have already started inhaling those particles. And that's why protective measures have to be taken when you're outside.
What kind of mask, if I'm going to the drugstore or, you know, or Home Depot, whatever store that I can find a mask, what am I looking for to make sure that I can protect myself?
There are these N95 masks, Steve, that pretty much, they are very good for PM10 particles. They can filter them out. They are not very effective for PM2.5. PM2.5s are very, very tiny. So at least you can filter out large number of the particles by these masks.
When I think of all the smoke that's out there, and I was having a conversation in the newsroom earlier today about, you know, yeah, the smoke is really bad, but is it like the smog days of L.A. back in the 60s and 70s when you couldn't even see, you know, feet in front of you because the smog was so bad? Are we still better off now, even with wildfires, than we were back then?
Well, I mean, I have lived in L.A. for 45 years, and I remember early, late 70s, I would go running. Some days I would really have difficulty. L.A.'s the climate has gotten much, much better. But during the fires, Steve, the concentration of these particles are huge. I was probably running 4 or 5 miles away from a distance because I could see the fire yesterday morning and even today as well. Clearly, I was inhaling despite the fact that I had a wet rag on to filter out as much as I can. I could smell it. So those particles are significantly higher than a real bad smoggy day. Smoggy days are pretty bad, but this is very serious.
A lot of schools have closed or were closed at the height of the Getty fire, certainly in greater L.A. There's this discussion going on of whether it's safer for kids to go to school or to stay home, if there's a difference, whether kids are kept inside at home as opposed to being inside at the school. Do you think it's a situation where maybe schools shouldn't close? Maybe the kids should be allowed to go to school?
Ironically, you know, indoors are actually pretty good. I can only give you a good example of my house. Inside my house, it was pretty, you know, I couldn't smell much. But when I go out on my patio, then I could smell it. So if you keep the windows closed and those people who have air conditioning, to me, I think that's pretty reasonable to be at home. School kids, you know, there are 10, 15, and they have another 70, 75 years to live. These particles, the impact is going to be there for the remaining of their lives because some of these PM2.5 particles are they're going to go all the way down to many, many generations of these airways and air sacs in the lungs. And it creates inflammatory reactions.
This is why when you get those warnings about, you know, don't overexert when you're outside, or if you don't have to be outside, don't be.
You are really multiplying the volume that you're inhaling. When you exercise, if your resting minute ventilation is about, let's say, 8 liters, Steve, you're just sitting and talking to me. When you exercise, the minute ventilation goes up to about 30, 40 liters, depending on how vigorously you exercise. Kids run around at a very fast pace. So you are inhaling. You are inhaling 5 times more. That's why exertion is not a good idea during these smoggy or during the the fire conditions.
So don't overexert outside. Stay inside. The kids should be inside. Wear the mask, the N95 mask?
N95, yes, sir.
Dr. Zeb Mozenifar, a lung specialist at Cedars-Sinai and the medical director of the Women's Guild Lung Institute. Doctor, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, just like the haze of smoke, there's an air of ambiguity, or at least confusion, when it comes to information about wildfires, with a lot of jargon that can go over your head, like super scooper, dozers, hand crews, retardant, containment.
It remains 5% contained. That does not mean 95% out of control and blazing.
That's Mayor Eric Garcetti at a press briefing this morning talking about the Getty Fire and 5% contained. So let's hone in on that word specifically, containment. What does it really mean when you hear a term like that? What is it you should be thinking of? Stephen Ruta is a retired battalion chief of the L.A. Fire Department. Chief, thanks for being with us.
Good afternoon.
The fire crews have been working on the Getty Fire for something like 36 hours. I know there are hundreds of firefighters on the scene. I think at last count, more than 1,100. When we hear that the fire is only 5% contained, as the mayor just said, it doesn't sound like very much. What does it really mean?
Containment is the actual physical firefighting line that surrounds the fire. So you have a large square footage in multiple acres. I think we're almost up to 700 acres. That means containment. Full containment would be that there are firefighting lines or containment of that particular fire in that geographical area.
And that's where we get the 5% containment, by attacking the perimeter, correct?
Well, the containment is actually boots on the ground. Firefighters with firefighting lines that are being established by engine companies, or ground crews that have boots on the ground that are making a containment line between burn brush and unburned. And those are the workhorses of a brush fire. Normally, when you're watching them on a television or you on the radio airways or talking about their work, they're the unsung heroes, the crews that come from all over Southern California, the camp crews from the prison authority that come out and work with, alongside the professional firefighters that become mountain goats, if you will, with their tools and equipment. They might even be dropped in by helicopter and establish a perimeter between the fire and the unburned brush.
So containment is boots on the ground, right? That's what it is, boots on the ground.
Absolutely. A defensible line between the fire itself, the flame-linked fire, and unburned brush, where they're dividing up that area so that we don't have any spillover into the unburned brush. And that's an amazing job that they do. You know, for your listeners, obviously, you know, when you see those fire crews in those steep canyons, and this is probably some of the toughest terrain that our firefighters in Los Angeles have seen for a long, long time. This is an urban interface, which means we have homes that are built through these canyons. So the containment means that we have those lines around just 5% of those canyons, those ridges, and we have to be very cautious how we handle that, especially with winds coming maybe later tonight.
So containment can actually go down.
Well, 5% means we are still very vulnerable. Thank God within the city of Los Angeles and the county of Los Angeles, we have our helicopter crews, got the super scoopers, which are those fixed wing that go out to the Pacific Ocean or body of water and scoop up over 2,500 gallons of water from the ocean. We're lucky also that our helicopters can fly at night with infrared goggles, and they are amazing pilots that have served us from the county of Los Angeles, the city of L.A., and a great job that they're doing by keeping in. They have that observation for us as well. So it's an air-ground team, if you will.
Stephen Ruta, retired battalion chief at the L.A. Fire Department. Chief, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Boy, what a chock-full half hour of a show today. That is it for today. Tomorrow, mariachi musicians in waiting and a new doc that explores an all-American rivalry in culturally Latino East L.A. Next on KCRW, it's DNA with Francis Anderton. I hope you'll stick around for that. The latest on the fires, obviously, throughout the afternoon and evening right here on KCRW. Later this afternoon, all things considered from 3 to 7. I hope you'll stay tuned for that. We're online anytime at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Subscribe to the podcast while you're there. Catch up on the happenings and the sounds of your city and region. We would love to talk to you each and every day right here on Greater LA. Jenna Cagle, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Christine Comito, Amy Ta, and Christian Bordahl all bring this show together. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Honored for your presence. Thanks for your ear and time. Have yourself a great day.